You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this opening of Christmas week edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. We are currently about 5 minutes removed from the best team in the NBA, pushing the Pacers stuff in the second half. But still an overall good week to talk about, as always. I'm one of the hosts of this lovely show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Commuter News. On the line with me, my lovely co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, how about the week?
Yeah, did you know the Pacers had the longest winning streak until they lost to the to Bucks today?
I did know that. You stole my opening. Adam knew I was going to do that, so that's even meaner. Yes, the 16 win streak was nice, especially because you know, the Bucks and Lakers both lost at the same time. Things rolled well for them. They had a 6-game win streak. Destroyed the Kings, too, in there. I feel bad for that Kings game. It's going to get lost in the week. But they played really well in that game. And then they played a good first half against the Bucks, and then did not play a good second half. So.
Well, I mean, the Pacers are 13-4 in the last 17 games, by the way. Just some numbers out there.
Just playing fantastic basketball. So where do you start talking about this week? Because recency bias makes me want to go, wow, they just got their asses handed to them. But they really played good in the first half of that game and the other two games. So I don't really know where to start.
I think you just got to go game by game and start with the Lakers. Right,
sure.
I know they were Lakers without Anthony Davis, but the Pacers without Oladipo, so that's a wash in my opinion. I know probably not quite, but it's enough of a wash. and honestly, it's a break you kind of hope to get in this kind of the middle of the season, right? Maybe you get a, like previously used to be LeBron not playing on a back-to-back against Cleveland and he was there or whatnot. You just get a break and maybe you still win from a good team. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, when you end the year, you're not going to be like, oh, we beat them without Davis. You beat the Lakers. So that counts as a win that nobody thought you should win. When the Lakers win probably, what, we think 60-something games, give or take, probably this season.
Yeah, they're amazing. They are just totally amazing right now.
And I think you also got to start with in that game, just the way Turner and Sabonis played. I know Turner, really efficient night.
Turner was great. Sabonis was also great, but I mean, the way Turner's been playing, it's important to highlight his great game.
Oh, and he was just so good from 3-3 of 6. I mean, Sabonis, just like a 10 of 15 night. I mean, they have really figured out the staggering of them, and it's worked perfectly for both
guys. Sabonis was so good on offense. Like, obviously they got killed because they were cutting off drives and the pick and rolls where the Lakers were just dunking all over them. But Sabonis' offense, just the Lakers' big men had no answer for his moves.
Yeah, and he was amazing. And then when they played Howard, they had no answer for when Turner stretched the floor either, to be honest.
Yeah, and well, so the talking point with Turner to me this week, like we talked about last week, how we thought he was playing better and putting together some performances. But you had to notice too, right? Like when he would catch the ball, he would shoot right away this week, right? Like that. And with Miles, we've seen this for 5 years now, which seems crazy, by the way. Like his confidence gauge is so obvious with like how long it takes him to load up his shot and how like quickly he moves into the offense and stuff like that. And this week he finally felt back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's really based on how he shoots from three and how many threes he takes.
He finally had a good game and his confidence is back, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, he's now what, on six? We're now looking at 6 straight games this week of double-digit points for Turner after he had, what, 11 tonight? I mean, you know, he's never really going to be like a 30-point-a-game guy or even maybe even 20 consistently, but he's going to be a consistent, you know, 10 to 15 with his defense is enough. Yep. But you need him to, you know, that makes him a plus player on the court and helps, you know, them succeed because then he's the fourth best offensive option. And when you have a fourth option scoring 15 or let's say 12 points a game, it's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. When you know that the team runs their set and then things die and they just run a pick and pop with Turner and the Lakers don't have a guy who can extend out there. And all of a sudden you have open shots every possession, even when your set dies. And that's super nice to have when Sabonis is on the bench, especially because he's the offensive hub when he's in.
Well, and I will say, I mean, there really are very few guys who also want to play center and can stretch the floor, right? So, like, Davis and Porzingis come up first, but those guys, neither guys want to play center. Turner wants to play center and stretch the floor. He is really, in a sense, a unicorn around the league. Like, Brook Lopez might be the most comparable player, and he's just not nearly as good a defense as Turner is. I mean, it's just, but like, guys who can actually hit a three.
No, he might be better this year on D. Brook Lopez has been insane this year.
Well, let's remember who he's playing with. He's not the anchor of that defense. Right. Turner is the anchor of a defense and able to stretch the floor at the same time. That's totally different, you know, style than what Lopez has to do, who's just basically playing off Giannis, who is by far the best player on both ends of the floor in the court, and maybe since like 2007 LeBron.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I do agree with that. He does have a lot more aid of perimeter defense on his side.
Yes, ton more. Ton,
also, a little Brooke bit Lopez, is underrated. Okay, just a quick Brooke Lopez aside, for those of you who stuck around for the fourth quarter of Bucks Pacers, Brooke Lopez handled the ball in a pick and roll with Giannis and dunked, and I was just like, what just happened?
He also hit like 225-foot threes, so that's a whole other point.
He's just like the weirdest player, but it worked. Back to the Lakers, though. Yeah, both big men were really good, and I think that was key because, like I said, I think you'll look, even if you watch the game or at the box score, and be like, oh my gosh, JaVale and Dwight were making all their shots and they were so good. But like the Pacers strategy the whole game was LeBron or Rondo or Avery Bradley or whoever was handling the ball would drive and the Pacers would just sell out to stop this drive. Now, a lot of times that worked, that led to a bad shot or a bad kickout pass. But the times that, you know, occasionally, and actually quite a few times, it led to a lob, but in the aggregate, it worked out pretty well.
Well, and the Pacers, it's just about almost playing, like rolling the dice for the three-point shot, right? The Lakers were 25% from three. Basically the same against the Bucks.
But really, though, every 30%. non-LeBron division, they were okay from three. They were basically hit a third of their non-LeBron threes. I mean, it's still not great, but LeBron was really struggling.
That's true. They were 8 of 25, which is about 33% then.
They were basically – LeBron was struggling from deep. LeBron did really good getting to the basket. He's LeBron James. I mean, duh. But
he also – He also just kind of sucks in Indiana. I mean, he just has a history of not playing well in Indianapolis. It's really kind of crazy.
I wanted to say this earlier, but we got deterred by actual basketball conversations. But I wanted to say, even if AD played, who cares? LeBron has won a game he's played in Indiana since 2013, which I didn't know that. That's insane.
Is that the playoff game he won here, I guess?
I think so.
I think the last time he actually won a game in Indiana was 2013. He fouled out in that playoff game. I'm pretty sure.
That was on the broadcast, so that's the only reason I know that.
That's the last time he – Yeah, he didn't he win one in the playoff with the Cavs? The Cavs beat the Pacers.
So that had to be regular season, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but he's still, I mean, whatever. He struggles in Indiana and the struggles continue. I mean, he had 20 points, but it was a really inefficient night
for him. 20 shots. Took him 20 shots to get there.
And he had the worst plus minus on his team, which is saying something.
Free throws really killed the Lakers for this whole game.
Yeah, well, that's again, almost the exact opposite of the Bucks game, but yeah,
that's very true. Yeah, and then on the outside of the big men on the Pacers side, a guy who deserves highlighting, Aaron Holiday, continuing to be a spark on the bench, was nice.
Oh my God.
And Adam, I'm going to talk about a person named Alex. You didn't listen to my show with Alex, I'm guessing, but the Lakers guy I had on said small guards are killing the Lakers this year, and he was exactly right because McConnell was also good.
So are we a year away from them Pacers trotting out Holiday, Brogdon, Oladipo in a lineup?
Maybe. I mean,
because Holiday made quite a leap. I mean,
he figured it out.
I think that's the understatement of the year. It took
the coaches and whoever got through to him. It took him 10 games to say, Aaron, just don't think to shoot right away when you come into games and you'll be great. And he finally got it to click and it's all there and it's like everything just looks easier for him now.
You know, so he's
like involved instead of just forcing.
So he's up to 42% from three, but I want to take like basically from game, let's say, when did he really start? We'll call it game. I think game 10.
I think the game he made his second shot because he was like one for what?
17? Well, so it basically started, I would say actually the streak kind of started when he became the starter, right? He ended up, or not the starter, but got big minutes once.
Lamb, I guess. Lamb got a concussion.
Right. So it starts like Chicago, I guess, way back. Since that point, he's 45, 43, 85 shooting splits, 11 points per game, three assists and three rebounds, basically.
Dang. And that's what, like 20 minutes?
That's 23 and a half minutes. I mean, if he's going to shoot 43% from a three, which I'm not sure he's going to be that consistent, but if he's 40 plus from three with his ball handling skills and his ability to actually read the floor like a point guard, which you've seen recently. I don't know how he doesn't become a starter by next season, basically.
So, Adam, I have to tell you something. So, we did our schedule for the week of the show already planned out.
Yeah.
Thursday post-Christmas is Adam doing a topic of his choice because there's no game. It was originally scheduled for me and Adam. I was going to have that be the Tony Eats Crow and Aaron Holiday podcast.
I did one last week on Aaron Holiday.
To reschedule the Tony Eats Crow on the Aaron Holiday podcast.
Well, I'm sure you'll eat crow on Twitter after this podcast. But
it's true.
I mean, it's gonna be weird if he ends up starting because you know running out the three guard and the two center lineup is certainly something that's.
But Brogdon can guard threes, no problem. It's not.
I know, but then you're turning some bonus in turn, which is weird. But I mean, all to say is that he's making a leap in a way where, it's making guys like I know we did not trade right now, but like making certain players, like even Warren and Lamb, expendable in terms of trades to make a,
I don't know about that. Something else. Still don't know about that. let's get to the point where, you know, like the whole team is playing before we get to that.
Yes. No, but I mean, it's making them like 7 or 8 deep in a really good way, I guess, maybe wherever to put it, right?
Like, I think we just talked about the Lakers game and you just saw they were losing at halftime because they couldn't get Warren and Lamb going. And then they got Warren and Lamb going and they got a huge lead. Like, I totally don't think they're
expendable. Yeah, I guess that's...
They were like the key cogs and the reason they started to come back in the third quarter, especially Warren, because obviously Lamb got hurt and came out, but Warren was awesome in the second half of that game.
Yeah, but do we want to go right to the Bucks game where I think Warren just played like hot garbage and wasn't really trying out there? It felt like a time.
I don't really know what happened.
So let's do the Kings first, where Warren had an amazing 23.
Yeah, he was awesome. He
killed best player in the court.
There
best
you go.
In the
court. He was. He was amazing on offense.
He's just, I mean, we knew it was coming in, but he is so up and down. My God.
He's mostly up, right? We mostly spend time talking about like, yes, awesome. Warren is the score they can rely on and stuff. And then occasionally the Bucks are like, nah, we figured out how to stop.
So, I mean, I guess what's special for Warren having a good game? Like 18 points somewhere if he's not at 18?
Above 15 on 15? Under 12 shots. And I'm like, all right, good job.
So
because he's not awesome to get into the line because of the shots he takes.
So he had that great stretch from Memphis through New York with an 8-game stretch where he had like 20 points every time,
except for
like
every game.
One or two games, basically. But then since then, he's been like 12, 14, 18, 6, 12, 23. So he's basically had probably 4 of 6 bad games. And then tonight he had another like, 11 tonight? Not even. Nine.
He faded to the back quite a bit in this book.
Yeah. He had a very, I mean, terrible from three.
I don't even think he scored in the second half.
And then when he's not scoring, his defense just looks terrible. That's the other part of it.
Gets unengaged.
But the thing is, you're right.
I get the way he plays. I get it. Whatever.
His highs are so good that it's almost like you can take the lows at times. Because like when he's like, he can win you a game against the Kings that like, you just kind of need them in the season, right? So like, he's going to be perfect. And what you need is him to hit his highs when that second out of back-to-back, Oladipo's not going to play when he comes back. You need Warren just to come in, score 25, win the game for you, basically.
All right.
You know, be that guy.
If you're going to say Warren won the game, I want to shout out the other TJ for his performance against the Kings, too. McConnell was so good in this game.
Yes. And well, him and McDermott, I think that combination continues to just...
McConnell was the reason they weren't down by a ton at the end. I mean, they were losing at the end of the first, right? I think by like 2 or something.
Yeah, and then they took a huge lead.
Like they were down like 10 or 9 or something, and then he just 4 for 4, didn't miss, hit a buzzer beater, fueled the fire, was pushing the ball. He was amazing. He finished with 15 and 8. I mean, and McDermott too. You just said McDermott hit 3 threes. He was shooting the ball pretty well in general, and 6 rebounds. I mean, McDermott was everywhere too. Like those two guys just really got things going for this team. And we're gonna spend our post Bucks moments talking about the bench, but yeah, these two guys are nuts.
Yeah, I mean, just a preview we're going to talk about. It feels like the starters, especially start of the game, kind of hold the court, make it close, kind of close game. The bench carries them to a lead, and
they
go from there. Go against these bad teams who they are not. I mean, I guess the Kings aren't bad, but against these not the best teams in the league, I guess.
So, like the last 2 years, too, and Vic was healthy, especially, this is the case. I felt like the bench's role was mostly like don't let the lead drop by too much, or like, you know, don't let the deficit grow, and then the starters will save it. Whereas this season's bench is like, hey, they're extending the lead. You know,
no, and at times it feels like you just play the bench over the starters. I mean, I thought that way tonight. You know, going into the bus game, I thought honestly,
especially the third quarter was all bench saving, keeping it.
So the combination of Brogdon looking just taxed. He had to guard Giannis, and I don't know if Brogdon's finger starting to hurt him more. It looked like he was every time I went to a timeout, Brogdon was kind of holding his pinky and. I don't know, messing with whatever tape he has on it. So I don't know if that's the problem or who, whatever it is. But the starters definitely seem taxed in this game, or, you know, basically minus a bonus seem taxed in this game. And it seemed like the bench had all the energy. And that's, I thought at one point, I thought, why are we even playing, you know, these starters? We should just let the bench try to see if they can come back. And they almost kind of did until they, obviously Giannis came in and Lopez hit a bunch of 25-foot threes and that was it. But they made a little run, at least late.
A cool Brogdon thing is I heard a little something that he was wanting to guard Giannis. He was psyched to do it. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, his problem, right, is Brogdon, his finger is screwed up on his shooting hand and his dribbling hand. So,
I had like a hilarious moment in my head when they were up like 20 against the Kings with 4 minutes to go, and they cut to Brogdon's hand in the brace, and he's in the game. I'm like, this guy's hurt, and TJ Warren has the flu, and they're still in.
Well, and this thing, this finger thing is real. I mean, since he hurt his hand, he's shooting 43 and 34%.
He's not making shots right now.
which I mean, I don't know whether it's like, do they need to shut him down for a couple of days just to let it? It was like a pinky.
They have a big break coming up this week. So,
you really need about a week, maybe 2 weeks to just heal your hand. Like, it's not like an injury that's going to take forever. And maybe they just decided we can't afford it right now because we don't have Oladipo. Maybe you have to wait. Or maybe the All-Star break, that's when he gets it or what? Gets it healed and or whatever. But then he makes the All-Star game. It's a whole other problem, right? But, right. Maybe that's what they wait to, but it just seems like he needs to sort of like just need to rest it a little bit. Like I guess I'm assuming he's going to play tomorrow night on the back to back, but I would
tonight.
I don't know if tonight. I guess recording on Monday. Recording right now. It's 9:30 Eastern time on Sunday night. But I don't mean if the hand is really bothering him and it swells up. I mean there is some like thought maybe they should hold him out. I guess, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, anyone else from the Bucks game you want to talk about? I mean McDermott continuing to be a flamethrower is another guy, but.
I mean, can we talk about Jeremy Lamb real fast and just like the injury, the season from hell for him?
I feel, you know what I was saying earlier today to my brother-in-law, I said, of all the people to have not missed a game, TJ Warren, the guy whose Suns fans spent all summer saying, oh, he's going to miss all these games, like him being the only guy who hasn't missed a game. I think it's funny. Yeah, but I say that to say before the season, I had never worried about Lamb getting hurt because the last few years he had played a bunch of games.
He's played
79 and 80
last
few years. So I was like, oh, okay, apparently he's moderately healthy. I mean, the 2 years before that, he was in the 60s, but still. And then all of a sudden, he's just banged up left and right. And a lot of them are contact injuries. Like, it's not like he, the person, is a walking injury-prone guy or something.
It feels like it is this year. That just makes
it feel. It sucks.
Reckless, what, he's got groin, hip, knee problem, ankle problem, concussion too.
Yeah.
My God, he just – I mean, it's all in the right leg, right? So maybe it's all related in a way too, some of it all. But it just seems like – he just can't go like more than five games without getting hurt, it feels like.
So like this was the week for the – this is dumb, but like this was the week for this to happen because the Lakers get killed by small guards like Alex told me. And then the Kings, you know, between Hield and Fox and Corey Joseph and Justin James, they didn't need necessarily a bigger guard out there. But like sometimes, you know, especially against the Bucks here, they just didn't have Warren on anything. He just missed like the instant offense, going to hit every elbow jumper he takes. It's kind of Lamb stuff that he supplies.
So – yeah. The other thing I would say is if the Pacers are 100% healthy, I guess the Bucks weren't because they didn't have Bledsoe, right? So
they did not.
But like, are they closer to this Bucks team than we think? I mean, the Bucks are probably the best team in the league right now. Right. Easy, but like they basically held it with them for the first half of this game and they got away from them. And really, outside of like a pretty, I would say, awful little third quarter and then fourth quarter run, they were pretty much in this game the entire time. And I do wonder if they are actually closer to this team than the final score would say and that we think, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But it feels like if a healthy Pacers team could compete with Bucks team, they may not win a series against them.
No, they'd totally lose the series.
Could get two games out of them, I guess.
Giannis wasn't trying and almost had a triple-double. So.
You think he wasn't trying or you think he just...
Yeah, if Giannis takes more than two pull-up threes, he's not trying. That is my Giannis take.
Okay, that's fair.
He's literally practicing them. Like,
they also, the thing is how often is Wesley Matthews going to shoot 50% from three? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
we saw it last year. Either shoots six of eight or one of eight.
Right. So, like him, Lopez, and George Hill all shot 50% from three. I mean, how often is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Maybe it happened a lot because they play with Giannis, and that's like
bumps them all up.
But
I think the Bucks are just insane. And I'm not trying to say like the Pacers get killed in the second half. Like they played terrible, not justifiable, but. This is the team you're just gonna lose. You play the Bucks in Milwaukee, you just lose. They're just that good.
So the question is: are the Bucks more like the Rockets than they want to admit in a way? Where like when it comes to playoff time, yeah, they have Giannis, who's one. You know, the Demarcus have maybe the second best player
in the conference finals. What? No.
Yeah,
what?
No, but they're like the Rockets in the sense that when you get to a playoff series and you really just iso it down and make Giannis pass the ball, the surrounding cast is not going to hit enough shots.
Been good in the playoffs before. Bledsoe has not, but you really need
three good players to win a playoff series.
Yeah, that's why Bledsoe being bad kills him so much, man.
Yeah, I mean, so like, is that? I mean, I'm not saying the Pacers are the team to beat him. I'm not saying that, but just in general, does it feel like the Bucks are sort of?
I think they're good enough.
When you get down to a seven game series, they might actually get beat by a decent team
because they were an overtime away from being up 3-0 on the Raptors. You know, I mean, that's again revisionist history, but
yeah,
like I think they're good enough.
Yeah, maybe
Kawhi just went scoring.
I mean, Kawhi was the best player in the league last year.
So. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, they're just insane. And the second half showed how good the Bucks can be, even against the Pacers when they played like crap, but you know, they scored 34 in the whole second half, the Pacers did. Like the Bucks really stepped up and
the Bucks scored that in the fourth quarter alone.
Yeah. So they hit their threes and played defense. Like they're just thinking when they really need to be, they can just kill any team.
I guess to me, this game exposed the Bucks as maybe they
exposed the Bucks.
Yeah, but I mean, 30. But honestly, I would have thought the Pacers would have been down 20 at the first half. I mean, the Pacers were in this game for a half felt like surprising to me.
No.
I mean, I thought the way the Bucks manhandled the Lakers on Thursday, I'm like, this team's going to come in and just freaking destroy the Pacers.
They did. They won by 30.
Yeah, but I mean, like they didn't manhandle them the way the first half should have gone, I guess. Maybe that's my thought. It felt like the first half was much closer than it should have been.
But Bucks were on a back-to-back, too. So.
Were they? No.
They played the Knicks the night before.
The Knicks don't count.
I was going to say, does that count as a back-to-back? It's the worst one to have.
Pacers beat the Knicks on a back-to-back, down their best player. So, I mean, I'm not sure if the Knicks count as a basketball team. But, you know, I mean, that's true. I mean, that could have been the reason. It felt like the Pacers, like I said, maybe not exposed, but they're closer to the Bucks than I would have thought. I know they lost by 28, but I think the game was closer than the score indicated.
It was. That is true.
And it felt like the Pacers are closer than I would have thought.
I am busting your balls by saying they lost by 30. They did not play that bad.
And I think the Pacers are maybe a one injury away from being competitive in the East way that is actually kind of encouraging, right? So, like, let's say Middleton ends up going down at some point, that they could be that away from being able to compete in the Eastern Conference. It's kind of all you can hope for. So,
ready to chat about the bench?
Yeah, see if we break them.
So let's define what we're talking about here, because that's important. Because they're not going 10 deep anymore. Goga's out. The bench players are obvious, but we still have to say it. The two small guards, Aaron and TJ, two wing guys, Doug McDermott and Justin Holiday, and then I guess either Baig, but I'm thinking Sabonis while we speak here.
Sabonis plays with those four guys all the time.
Most of the time he is the guy. Sticking
So if we look at like the five-man lineup, I guess, I'm pretty sure he's the only one that's played over 100 minutes with them.
Okay. Nobody, well, Turner's been hurt. I don't know if that influences that, but still, yes, he is the guy.
But it does feel like they stagger it so that Sabonis plays, right?
Yes.
So,
I agree with that. That's on purpose. Nate said that before. Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to see if I can get a Turner lineup up.
They exist. I'll get it.
Holiday, McDermott, McConnell, Sabonis. Nope, that doesn't exist. I don't think they owes four with because I'm pretty sure because those five don't exist as one lineup. Because I don't think they've ever actually done it.
Those five, I'll find it for you.
Those four bench plus Turner.
Embarrassing yourself here.
If they exist, they exist. It's such a small sample size, it's irrelevant.
That's like, always false. Wow, the biggest. Wow, that screwed me up. All right, Turner, Holiday, McDermott, McConnell. Found it. 12 minutes.
Okay, so an insignificant amount of minutes.
Plus 9 in 25 possessions. Not very many. Yes, I agree.
Wait, so I can. Okay, yeah. What's the actual net rating? Give me the offensive rating.
28 points on 25 possessions. So what is that? 112?
Okay, that's not bad. Okay. Anyways. No, it's fine, but I'm saying 12 minutes is literally a quarter.
It's an insignificant amount of time. Yes.
It's
incredibly ridiculous amount of time.
Yes. So anyways,
way bigger. Without the four non-Sabonis starters, we're talking about 323 minutes of playing time. That's a lot to look at.
Yes.
So to me, what makes this group work, and we'll get to numbers and all this stuff, is that Sabonis has two-man chemistry with just any player. Like, it's so easy for him to just be a hub and, you know, smooth some pick and roll into some handoff, or like fire past the weak side corner, or he himself obviously can post up. And it's, you know, for a lot of guys in this day and age, posting up is a bad end of the possession, but for Sabonis, it's a good end of the possession. So they just always have a way they can score.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. I think there's other chemistry. The Holiday brothers have some chemistry that is just built in from having the same blood. McConnell and McDermott have a chemistry too. I mean, they've gotten really good at the hockey assist kind of play on that. I feel like where McConnell cuts in, kicks out, and kicks around one of the Holiday, kicks another Holiday or to McDermott. The screen and roll game off of either with the ball or off the ball with Sabonis. So either Sabonis hands it off or McConnell's waiting to make the pass or Holiday waiting to make the pass. It's just they have like maybe I mean, let's say what, five or six set plays, but they can run so many variations off them. They can run it so efficiently that it's like almost impossible to stop. I mean, you occasionally see them stop the McDermott handoff, but then it just turned into a McDermott kick in or a pick
or something, right?
Some kind of cut. Or, you know, if the Sabonis McConnell pick and roll doesn't work, it ends up in a corner shot for one of the Holidays. I mean, it's just, there's so much offensive power, especially when you have a guy like Aaron Holiday who's shooting 42%. You got McConnell, who I don't have it in front of me, pulled up real quick, but you got Sabonis, who's the Pacers' most efficient offensive player, I think, if you go by rating. McDermott is shooting, what, 47% from three? I mean, you just got McConnell shooting 53%. You just have like an insane shooter. The worst shooter in the lineup is Justin Holiday, who's shooting 38% from three. So, I mean, it is just, it's an insanely talented offensive group.
Now, McConnell's the worst shooter in the lineup, but whatever.
What's McConnell shooting 53% from the field?
I meant from three.
Sorry. No. I don't count McConnell three or Sabonis three because I don't take enough of them to matter. Right?
I thought I would well actually you just for fun.
No, I was. But what I'm saying is it's such an efficient, and because you're playing a lot of bench units where you're also playing subpar talent on the other side.
Yep.
You can get away with not being the best defenders when you just kind of try hard, right? I mean, that's kind of McConnell's thing, is he just brings an energy that not a lot of bench point guards bring, especially on some of these bad teams where they're not even trying. I mean, you know, when you play a good team, usually that's the sign of a good team, is they have a bench that's like just tries their ass off, basically. So it's why you see them beat up on the Kings, that bench unit, the Lakers even a little bit, they beat up on them, I thought. The bench, but I mean, you keep going back, but that's why the Pacers have been able basically to smoke a bunch of these bad teams, because their bench just runs away with it, essentially.
Isn't this nuts? Like 2 months ago, or like a little less than 2 months ago, we're like, oh man, like they're in trouble.
Well, they didn't stagger. Remember, they didn't stagger for the first, I don't know, five, six games. They didn't stagger until Turner came back, and then they staggered, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, that works.
So here we go. 114 minutes of the Holiday, McDermott, McConnell, Sabonis lineup. 114 minutes.
You know what that ranks in the league overall for 100-plus minutes of lineups?
First?
No, it ranks like seventh, but that's still impressive. Okay. It's slightly below the starters, who are 13, a plus 13.4 net rating, but that's still amazing.
Yeah, they outscored opponents by 36 points in 114 minutes. That's basically 2.5 games, like 4 minutes over 2.5 games. That's like outscoring another team by 14 points a game. They're just nuts.
Yeah.
They've been really good. 268 points on 241 possessions. Adam, that is an 111 offensive rating. That is very good.
Yep, I'm staring at it right now.
I don't know why I like the raw number so much. It doesn't actually add that much much value.
No, and it's hard for people to visualize it anyways. It is.
You know what? I mean, I'm looking at all the lineups that have no Lamb, Warren, Brogdon, and Turner. So here's a random one, okay? I can't tell what Holiday this is. It doesn't say. It just says Holiday. All right, McConnell, Holiday, McDermott, Leaf, Bitadze, okay? Does it matter which Holiday? This will still surprise you. 60 points on 38 possessions. That is an offensive rating of 158. Where does that come from? Oh, it's Justin Holiday. That is Justin Holiday. That's nuts. That's funny.
Well, my favorite lineup is if you do like the, you gotta get rid of the minutes limit and do the best like five man lineup. I think the Jakar Sampson one is the best.
Hey, you got to play finally against the Bucks. I'm so happy to see him back on the.
I mean, you gotta do like some minutes because you can't like you get a bunch of 1 minute lineups, but I think if you put 30 minutes in. And you do the best five-man lineup. I think the best one is the Jakar. Maybe it's second best. It's Warren, Jakar, Sabonis, Brogdon, Holiday is the best net rating lineup for five games at 66 minutes.
If you replace Sabonis in the lineup we talked about, you know, the key bench group, if you replace Sabonis with Leaf, they have 20 points on 31 possessions. That is a 62.5 offensive rating. I love small sample sizes. They're so fun. So you talked about shooting, and I think this is – staggering to see because it's been 114 minutes. That lineup, the good lineup that we talked about, is shooting 43.5% from deep. They're just making everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's
been and they're open shots. They're good at creating open shots. That's part of the
so key. And I think that's part of the difference which has made McMillan, in my mind, just a better coach this year, is that he's
way more flexible.
Yeah. Well, it took him 10 games, but he got to the Sabonis thing with the staggering, which is a huge thing to figure that out, right? Like that's like I think that's the key for, I mean, any good coach. I mean, is trying to figure out how to stagger when they have some of the same talent, staggering those guys because they've got two talented players trying to figure out how to make them work together. And they don't always work together, but you can figure it out, right? So, like, I mean, that Harden and Chris Paul is the classic example of two guys who really are better together separately. So you want to not or let them as little as possible, but you want them both to play at all times, because when one's on the court, you're going to probably win those minutes because they're just going to be the best player on the court in a way. Now Turner and Sponge are not the same, that same way, but they're kind of the next step below. But it's the first time where I feel like, oh, he actually has some like offensive creativity, or is trying to, you know, figure out, you know, is not just kind of sticking by some weird, you know, got to play the five stars all together, sit them on the bench together kind of way. I mean, that's like it's an old school move, right? He's kind of adapting to that. The other thing is he's really making an effort to tell the bench guys to get McDermott involved in a way that I just didn't, I don't know, using him almost as a weapon in a way that it didn't feel like he used him last year at all.
Right. Right. And I think it's good that, you know, for his evolution as a coach, we know him to be a pretty rigid guy. That's not a bad thing necessarily. A lot of guys respond well to that, but this is the most flexible he's been in like decision-making, from not even like in just A, zoomed out generalities, but B, like game to game, you know, just to get the right guys out there to make the bench work. He's been much better at that than he has in past years.
Yeah. And other thing you too is you can feel that. So McMillan used to be a point guard. I know it's a pretty, I mean, if you're a Pacers fan, you know that.
Scott had a great story about Brogdon and his relationship in that way.
Yeah. You can feel like the way McConnell and Brogdon play, you can feel it's like McMillan's like wanting to style. Yeah. I don't know how to put it. Like, you just like, I know McConnell is shoots a lot less than Brogdon, but he runs some of the same kind of style where you kind of cut in and try to create, you know, try to create guys that kind of collapse on you to create space for other guys. And it just like, you can feel the team. Like, he wanted McConnell to be the guard, and he wanted Brogdon because he those guys epitomized what McMillan was, and they can like run his system in a way. In a way he's never really had, right? I mean, the backup punker used to be Corey Joseph, who was a fine player, but just is not, just can never really run an offense. It felt like he was always better off as a two guard kind of thing. And Collison could do it for a while, but that was kind of it. But Collison is still such a lower, you know, level player. I mean, he was really efficient, but he just wasn't on the level of Brogdon was. Just couldn't be. I mean, he was 6'1", not 6'6". 6'5", yeah. Whatever Brogdon is. So.
Right. Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit. And I'm glad the Pacers turned a weakness into a strength.
So yeah.
Good for everybody. And I think when you turn a weakness into a strength, like the players all have the same skill set they did back then. Obviously the players deserve credit for learning to play with each other, but a lot of that's coaching too. So.
Yeah, well, and
Coach of the year candidate.
The Pacers are, they just got much more talented players, and they just figured, like, instead of going for veteran and reliability, they went with raw talent and hoped to mold it, and they've been able to mold it so far, I think is the right way to put it.
Right. You ready to look ahead at the coming week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Tonight, the Toronto Raptors are in town, the fighting OG Anunobis, as I'm calling them. They had a 30-point comeback today, Adam. Isn't that insane?
Yes, it is. They are... So who was hurt on their team? And that's where we got to start, I think.
Everybody. So
just do a list real quick. You want me to do it?
This is just recent. Marcus Thal is out. He's out for a while. The left hamstring injury. Stanley Johnson has not played since November. This is all basketball reference. Norman Powell has a subluxation of his left shoulder and is out indefinitely. Siakam has a stretched groin and is out indefinitely. Matt Thomas, who you probably haven't heard of, but is a good shooter, is a few weeks away from returning. So they're literally playing Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, and a bunch of Serge Ibaka is good, and then like a bunch of kind of like young role players who are skilled at certain things. And they still just beat the Mavs somehow because Kyle Lowry is A, good, and B, they just had an insane fourth quarter.
Well, remember, the Mavs are also down.
They beat the Bucks without Luka. They're still playing well.
Did they beat the Bucks without Luka?
They beat the Bucks without Luka.
I thought Luka was on that was playing that
nuts.
Game.
No, he did not play.
No, that is nuts. I mean, Chris... Wow. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Mavs are good this year. They're same record as the Pacers, right? They're one game. They're half a game behind them.
That's a good win for the Raptors. Well, any 30-point comeback is a good win.
I will say, though, because of one, Lowry played 42 minutes. That's a huge thing.
Yes,
two,
back with that.
This is a fortunate back-to-back for the Pacers at a good time. Again, getting lucky, sometimes better to be lucky than good. Drawing a team that is, like we said, off the bench is playing. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is the most, you know, name I recognize off the bench. Basically,
right, let me look at who their bench was in this.
So Malcolm Miller Malcolm Miller played 17 minutes.
Okay.
Terrence Davis played 17. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson played 29, and is it Boucher? Buker?
How do
you
say it? Chris Boucher.
Boucher played, I think, 24 minutes. That was the bench.
Yikes.
Lowry played 42, OG 29,
Aaron
Ibaka
Davis
24.
Davis has been good for them as a bench player, but yeah, they just got a lot from a lot of guys.
I mean, what's good about this team is
Pat McCaw. played 26 minutes. He's like actively a bad basketball player.
You can also see why this team is as good as they are now, because even with all these guys hurt, they still have a pretty solid top four. Like Van Fleet, yep. Lowry, OG, Ibaka. Now, those are not like world-beating great, but there are four players that I think are pretty good and I would trust in most situations. Yeah, that's why this team is where it's at, because the other five guys that basically play are hurt, but that's why they're 21-8 right now or whatever the record is.
Yeah, healthy. I mean, this kind of sucks that they're not healthy, because Pascal has been just so good this year, and he's actually been struggling recently, and he's still been really good. Pascal has been struggling basically all of December, and he's still at 46-39-81 on 25.3. Like, he has been so good this year for this team. And Marc Gasol has been an awesome defender, even though it looked like on opening night he couldn't move still, and now he can again. Like, they're just, man, their player development staff is nuts. They're just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Pascal has made the leap into what? One of the best. He's probably an all-NBA borderline right now.
Yeah, one of the best 15 or 20 guys. He's nuts.
Yeah, and I think you probably could have saw that coming a little bit. I think last year we thought, but then he kind of tapered off in the playoffs a little bit.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Right, he wasn't good in the playoffs. I mean, that team was kind of Kawhi carrying them. But he still, it's almost why it made sense for Kawhi to stay, because Pascal might have been the best. But he also got Paul George, but if he didn't get PG, it made sense to stay.
Anyone who helps you win as a ball handler in the playoffs, even if they're not at the level yet, is still going to be good. I think it became obvious in the playoffs last year, even as a second or third option, Siakam's good.
Yeah.
I'm really bummed they're not going to be playing him, but the Skeleton Crew Raptors on a back-to-back is
the draws you can get. Like I said, it's very lucky than good. You know, Patriots at Oladipo could use some luck, right? They could use some of their own luck of some teams not playing. And, right, they sit, game back of the Raptors in the standings, so this could be a fortunate win for the Pacers if they get this one.
I think they are now a game and a half
back.
Because of they've played more games, though.
Yeah, they played one more game of them, so.
So I think – I forget what other team I was talking about this with. The team that I thought was bad because they had no shot creators. Can you remember who I was talking about?
I forget.
Not that they're a bad shot creation team, but with all the guys they have out, that's what I think strikes me the most as interesting about the Raptors, because they're getting more passing than they have in years past from Lowry and Van Vliet, but that is it. They do not have any passing left outside of those two with these injuries. That's why I think it's going to be key for the Pacers to, be alert on drive so those guys can't set up in the normal way that they do, because, just playing defense within the set, the Pacers are good at that. So guarding pick and rolls and dribble drives and things like that will be key.
I mean, to me, they're probably, especially after the way this team shot, they're probably Lowry taking 25 shots again and jacking up. What? How you want to bet that 10, 24-foot three-point shots, give or take, or whatever those top-of-the-key pull-up shot he loves to take that are like a foot off three-point line? I mean, He might shoot well, but I feel like playing back-to-back of 42 minutes last night, he's probably going to struggle, would be my guess.
Yeah.
Just because of exhaustion.
Kyle Lowry's so good, though. He could be.
Oh, he's a great, but there's very few players in the league that can go back-to-back playing 40-plus minutes and play well both nights. I mean,
right. Just, understood. And with travel in the middle. Yeah,
and you don't do it anymore, so nobody's has developed that skill, right? Nobody plays back-to-back anymore, so. Right.
I want to talk about Matt Thomas too. Matt Thomas, for those of you who haven't heard of him, he came from Europe this year. Adam, do you see his 3-point percentage in front of you right now?
I do not. Do you want me to look at it?
53.8. So he only plays about 10 minutes a game for this team, but I mean, every Raptors person I've talked to and the two or three times I've caught this team, he just doesn't miss when he's
so he has a finger injury though, remember?
Oh, I know. But if he plays, just watch out.
But he's out 2 weeks according to the 20th.
Well, that sucks.
So he's probably not going to play. He did not play last night on Sunday.
All right, Adam, ready? Butcher me up. Who you got?
Who do I have? Fred Van Fleet.
Fred is awesome.
He only played 28 minutes. He had a terrible night. It felt like he might be due for something. I guess he'll be guarded by Aaron Holiday would be my guess.
Yeah, maybe unless Lamb's back, but I doubt it.
I don't think Lamb's will be back. I mean,
playing the first night of the back-to-back, there's no point, especially with four days off.
Yeah, seems like, I mean, especially because they play fine without him. They just need to let him get, 100% healthy before bringing him back. That's what they try. They've been trying to, he gets 100% healthy because I can hurt something again. But
I feel bad for Fred VanVleet because he has to settle for being the second coolest guy born in Rockford, Illinois.
Were you born in Rockford, Illinois?
Yeah, I was, Adam. Thank you for asking.
I figured that you and Margo was. So.
It is me, yes. We learned in the playoffs last year, Fred literally sunk the Bucks. He was so good at making shots that series, and What a cool run.
He sunk the Warriors too a little bit.
He did. Yeah, birth of his child in the playoffs too. What a cool story. And now he's proving this year that it wasn't just like some magic playoff story run like they had with Biombo, and he's like actually a very good basketball player.
Yeah, did he get a contract this offseason, right?
I don't remember what his deal is.
I'm looking it up real quick because he bet on himself, but I thought that worked out where he got like a pretty nice.
Currently, it's working. He signed a 2-year, $18 million contract.
But it ends this year, so he's going to hit free agency next year. He won't be rich. Yeah, he'll be unrestricted.
$1 million a year point guard. He's good.
You think 15? I think he'd be more like 20 in the. Well, I guess the market's going to be depressed.
Not a lot of money next summer.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm not sure what the deal is going to be with him.
Yeah, but he's probably he's kind of
the Raptors could be the team that can pay him that much, though.
Well, and they might do it because he's sort of the cornerstone of their future, right? Like it's him and Pascal and OG are kind of the cornerstone. So you don't want to like lowball him and get him to leave. You want to pay him what he's probably. Yeah, I think he might be 20.
Final bridge year with Lowry at 34.
Like I think he might get the Brogdon contract. That seems like
it's fine for him. He's awesome. He's not as good as Brogdon, but he's close. He's damn good.
Yeah, and his potential is probably to beat that. And he's younger, right? Isn't he a bit younger? Or no, is he also a 4-year guard? No, he's also a 4-year guard.
25. He's younger. Just
younger, but less. Yeah, but he was also, right? He went to, he's the Wichita, yeah, Wichita State guy. He played for 3 or 4 years there too. So
he did. So he's a good butcher. He's kind of weird because it doesn't feel like he's so good at anything, but he's just solid at a lot of things. And that's a hard player to guard.
I agree. I think he's my butcher. What's your butcher?
OG Anunoby. Because OG can shut down TJ Warren and force the Pacers to get offense from other places.
That's fair.
And he makes his threes very well.
Did not have a good game against the Mavs. It was 3 of 8.
Ooh, that's pretty good. That's above league average from three. Can you believe that?
He was 0 for 2 from three.
Oh.
He took 8 shots the whole game.
That will not do it. No, that will not do it.
He had 6 points.
Being minus 27. And IU, I'm forcing this one. Shout out to Armon Franklin for saving that team at the Crossroads Classic.
So pretty much the Raptors won because I'm pretty sure Lowry played the entire bench because all the stars are minus 20 and the bench.
That's been the Raptors thing for years is the Lowry plus bench group just works.
Okay.
It's like how JJ Barea and the Mavs do the same.
Do you want to know what my X factor is?
Brogdon.
Oh, wait. No, it's not a person. It's a thing.
Is it the bench?
No, it's the fact that that this team is just devastatedly injuries. That's the X factor. That's it for the Pacers. Is this team going to be so hurt by injuries they're going to just be exhausted essentially?
It's certainly possible.
That's my X factor. Exhaustion. Possible. I don't know what yours is, but
about the bench, and I think this. I'm saying the bench for the same reason that you just said exhaustion is like. Especially so when you're beat up, is your second unit is weaker and tired. I think the Pacers bench, who might also be tired, but still is not beat up, could be due for a big game in general. So lazy for us not to pick players, Adam, but we just both.
Can McConnell be a pest to Lowry on the bench?
That's the Lowry question. And Van Vliet, they'll have one of those guys in another time. I would not have picked a Pacers win if Pascal was healthy, but he is not. So I think the Pacers do win.
I do. And I think they smartly, they should have done it sooner, but they smartly took their starters out with 6 minutes left in this game or 5 minutes left. So they didn't play their starters too much tonight. Right.
They also have a small blessing here in that, I mean, I don't know if players really think this way, but Pacers don't play for 4 days after this game where the Raptors play on Christmas. So maybe mentally in the fourth quarter you check out differently if you're a Toronto player versus.
That's fair. I mean, I think the big thing too is that like Turner only played 22, Warren only played 26, so they didn't really play a ton of minutes. And you're a little deeper now with Sumner back, so you could maybe if you need to extend it a little bit to somebody else. Sumner played 19 tonight, but
Sumner's done fine. I'm glad he's gotten some time.
Yeah, but now you're sort of like 10 deep again, I guess in a way. So.
All right, let's move on to the other 21-8 Eastern Conference team. The mighty Miami Heat. They play against Utah and then a big gap before this game. So they might have a different record at this time. The Heat had just the player development Miami machine has returned. Bam Adebayo is unbelievable. Kendrick Nunn just finding a diamond in the rough. Justice Winslow has been good when he plays. Duncan Robinson was on a two-way last year. He's been like a ridiculous shooter for them. They just find a way to churn out these guys from their end of the bench and make them good. And the Heat are really good.
Yeah, Bam might be the one where Sabonis doesn't make the All-Star game.
Yeah, Bam's the guy right in front of him. Adam, I need to make a correction on the show if you don't mind. I did my first like early All-Star look two weeks ago, and I had Blake Griffin in. I would like to remove Blake Griffin from that. Blake Griffin has been bad since then.
Who are you going to put in, though, over him?
Sabonis was my first guy out, and I had Bam in. So Sabonis was over Blake officially. Although, I don't know. I thought of someone else today that is a maybe, but Spencer Dinwiddie is the guy who's pushing that spot now, but we'll see. 3 30-point games in a row for Dinwiddie. Anyway, maybe you can talk about that on Thursday. It's the first day after voting starts. Anyway, yes, Bam has been amazing. It was a lot of words to say that.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, Bam has arguably turned into like the – what's the right way to put it? I'm trying to think. He's arguably the most improved player of the season.
Him and Graham, yeah.
And he just made a jump into like from
– he can do everything. He
was from a fine player to like
– very good player.
Could he be, I don't know, a part of a big three, I guess, in a way?
He can literally do everything. He can pass. He can rebound. He's not like an outside shooter, but he can He can defend.
I was going to call him kind of like a Draymond Green leap, but he can't do the three still. Now, that was Draymond's biggest thing. When Draymond could make that three at like 35%, it was like, oh.
He's like the perfect connector because like the other guys that they start that do well for them, when he's healthy, Justice starts. And then Kendrick Nunn and Jimmy Butler and Dragic when he's in there and Hero who can score the ball too. Like he's the perfect connector between one kind of good self-creator who can kind of pass in another. You know, he's the perfect guy in between all those guys.
So Justice is back-to-back. It's day-to-day. I'd assume that he's probably going to play by this game.
Yeah, it's 7 days after the last game he missed against the Knicks, so he'll probably be back.
He also didn't play against
the Sixers. He's banged up a lot this year, though. He's only played 10 games.
He also didn't play against the Sixers, I don't think.
Yeah, we'll either. They're just making their young guys help, and now they have a full rotation of good players. Like that, there's something to that.
Yeah, the thing I guess with them is they're not as they're not super deep because of injuries. You get minus.
That's what I'm trying to say is like their fifth starter Myers Leonard plays the 10th most minutes for them because they just have a lot of guys who can sneak in and play good minutes and be helpful.
Well, I guess I'm looking at their last couple games. They're basically playing eight players. But I guess they do have – we'll have Winslow Black and have Drogic back, so that will kind of add up. So I guess maybe – because they were playing about eight deep for the past three or four games, but that's because they've been down those guys.
Yeah, like their bench – their bench is not names. You know, like Olenek, Derek Jones, Duncan Robinson. These guys aren't awesome names, Hero, but they're good. They're helpful.
Yeah, and Butler's a really good basketball player.
Drogic is your backup point guard is nuts. Like, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's going to get traded, right? That's the move eventually.
No way. They're too good to trade him.
Well, I thought the move was you trade him for some, like...
If they know that they can have Justice start every game the rest of the way, maybe. But
yeah, that, I guess that's what I mean.
I don't think...
Because, right, they don't get the caps because they're still over the caps. So they need him to be able to go get a superstar, per se.
If they were to do that, that would make sense.
He's the only one that makes his contract wide.
Yeah, they just have figured it out. They just... Okay, look, we have this minimum guy who has this one skill. All right, we'll turn him into something useful. They just do it every year, and they add Jimmy Butler to that, and all of a sudden they're awesome, and they deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question with them is, I don't want to say is it real in a way, but they sort of...
I don't know why I'm hesitant to believe in them either, because
they're... Yeah,
I can't...
They missed the playoffs last year, past 2 years, right?
He didn't have Jimmy Butler, though.
Yes, I understand that. But I guess with me, it always feels like Butler is like, but maybe he's finally happy, so he's not going to be a cancer in the locker room. But he always ends up blowing up a team at some point, it feels like, right?
So far, so good.
Right? So I'm hesitant, one, because I'm not sure they can stay healthy. I'm not sure Drogic's going to be able to actually play as many games he's played. He seems to be hurt every year. Winslow's the same way. And if those two guys are not there, that team is like, they're still good, but they're not, you know.
Health could derail them. Right now, they're healthy, though. And
Butler's not having, like, I mean, he's having a good year, but he's not having, like.
Yeah, he is. He's having a great year. He's been awesome.
Well, he's only shooting 20% from three. I mean, it's not like he's.
Yeah, he's not shooting well.
He's getting the free throw a ton.
More. He's still scoring pretty good. He's a good player.
Kemba's only taking 14 shots per game. That's, like, so low for him.
He's shooting less than Kendrick Nunn, which is just crazy. He's shooting, apparently. My phone thought I said Siri right there. So
I heard the little beep.
To pop up. Thanks.
I guess maybe I don't believe in this team yet, but they'll probably be the Pacers, and then I will.
My thought about the Heat to end and then lead into Butchers is they're kind of like the Pacers in a way. You just said they play eight guys. Well, their top seven are all averaging double figures. You know, they can just kill you in so many ways. So that is why I think the Heat are so good this year.
That's fair. So I think You want Butler
division or yes, we can.
Do you want Butler and then I'll do Bam, or do you want to do first?
That's funny. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I don't really buy Kendrick Nunn for some reason, even though he's been really good. So I was going to pick Jimmy or Bam. And my X factor is the opposite of whichever player I end up picking. So I'm going to pair Bam and Turner here, if you don't mind. Okay. You have the Turner, you know, keep Bam 5 feet from the basket, so he's either forced to take harder shots around the rim or pass. And on the other end of the floor, just like with Whiteside, you know, we saw the way that he play defense. Like if you can even drag him one step farther by making some threes, that helps a ton. So big game for both ends on those guys.
I think there's a chance that Sabonis ends up guarding Bam.
No, I think the opposite. I think the chance is that Bam guards Sabonis.
I guess is Bam going to plant himself?
Might end up on Turner. That's possible.
It feels like that's interchangeable. A lot of it's interchangeable, in my opinion. I mean,
totally is.
Right? Because I mean, I guess it depends who's going to plant himself in the paint or not. And if nobody does, then Turner's going to – who's going to play at the corner? Because I think I'd rather have Turner moving around than Sabonis just carrying the guard in the corner. I don't know. You're right. I guess it doesn't really –
All right, Jimmy. Talk to me about Jimmy.
I think you did it all before. He's
amazing.
Yeah, he's one of the six best forwards in the league. He has been that way for probably – 4 or 5 years now, and he is finally content, I guess. You know, he's not, you know, in Chicago where he thinks front office hates him, or in Minnesota where he didn't want to be originally, or Philadelphia where he's the third guy option. He's in a place where he chose to be, he wanted to be. If he gets angry here, he knows that means that he's just being kind of a selfish prick. And so I think he's happy and content, and the team is doing well, I think, because he has some calmness around him. And when he's calm and he's playing good, he's one of the best players in the league.
He sure is. He sure is.
He borderline can carry a team probably to a conference finals if that's what's going on.
He was the best closer on that Sixers team last year, and they needed.
He has some playoff series where he's just the best. Like one, like he went toe to toe with LeBron a couple times in those Bulls days when he was super young. I mean, or super raw. I guess not young, but like in his first second year, where he stole a couple games off the Cavs or Heat back in the day because he was just. He's just that good. I mean, I think legitimately he can carry this team to the conference finals if things break right for them. If there's, you know, a top three seed, not to play the Bucks, basically.
I also did my X factor, so you need to do that too.
What was your X factor? Was it Turner? Mine's probably Brogdon in this game.
Okay. Yep. Fair.
I doubt we'll see it, but I wonder if we see him on Butler a little bit in situations.
Yeah, he does like doing that.
But I think after the way it went against Giannis, where he just looked too taxed, they probably try to pull back from that. But I think more importantly, on the offensive end, the guards are going to have to succeed to win. It's really going to kind of have the advantage, I think. So it's going to be up to the Holiday, Brogdon, and then obviously the Brogdon Sabonis thing is the most efficient thing for the Pacers offense. So,
yes. All right. This one I can see them winning, but I'm going to pick the loss here.
I feel like every time people lose, they win. I feel like they win a lot. I feel like this is a win. Because Miami has a bunch of days off, though, right? They're not playing on Christmas, are they?
Yes.
So they play in Utah on the 23rd, which is the same as the Pacers. So same. No, well, yes, right. They play on the first night of back-to-back. So, yeah, I think this is a Pacer win, in my opinion.
Wow, look at you. Love it.
It just, I don't know. I feel like this is a week they go 3-0. But
well, here's a crap team they played in the week.
First time they're getting a bad team on a back-to-back versus they got Washington on a back-to-back earlier this year, but instead of playing the Bucks on a back-to-back, for example, or something, somebody good, or Toronto, or, you know, all the good teams they played, Philadelphia on a back-to-back, same kind of.
So obviously missing Zion sucks, and the Pelicans' hype was them having Zion and being a fun team to watch.
Is Zion going to play this year at all, you think, Tony?
I don't know. I think
he's on my fantasy bench, and I felt like that was going to happen. Now I'm getting really pissed.
So, see, I was excited for Zion and the Pelicans, like a normal human. But some people were like, ooh, this team could be a fringe playoff team. And like,
no.
It's an image. And I was like, what are you talking about? And now I think I feel pretty good about that. Even if even with Zion, you're not going to be, like, way better than 7-23. So the Pels it just doesn't quite work. And they've got good scores. Ingram's over 25 points a game, which is one of the most under-talked about crazy things about this season. And they still can't figure it out because outside of their starting five, they just have nothing going for them on offense.
Yeah. When I talk about trade, Drew Holiday, the Heat is probably a pretty common floated trade.
Or Drew to the Bucks.
Yeah, do they have the salaries to make it work?
Adam, you know who it would take is Eric Bledsoe.
That would make sense.
Look at that, right?
That would get over the sadness of losing Brogdon.
I think that would make the Bucks the favorite. So
yes, okay. Anyways, yes. So this team is, like you said, is basically a starting five, and really, honestly, it's Ingram, Holiday, and maybe Redick and a bunch of other players.
I feel bad. They really did do a nice long-term building strategy summer. You know, getting a good shooter on your young guys, give them space, and getting Ingram and letting him do stuff is good. They got all these young guys in the door. But it's just been bad. And that, you know, it's going to take time for it to all work, and I understand that, but it's just been bad. And Lonzo cannot shoot well enough to be helpful for them, which is unfortunate because they need his passing, because they don't have a lot of assist outside, or a lot of shot creation outside of Giroux, and they're just kind of relying on Brandon Ingram to create his own things.
The thing is, too, that they need to trade one of Holiday or Ball, because I don't think either guy plays off the ball well. I think both guys.
I don't think they'll trade Lonzo.
I don't think so either. But I could see them saying, "Well, we have Drew up for two more years. He locked in two or three more years, probably."
Yeah.
And there is a chance to get a good pick this year. Ingram continues to play really well. They get Zion. They could be decent next year or 2 years. Be a playoff team. They just keep Drew, because if they get rid of Drew, they need to get something back that keeps them competitive. And like a Bucks trade, right, kind of makes sense. But they really can't get anything back that can help them.
I can finally concede Drew Holiday's availability after years of people ringing in mailbag question to the podcast. Oh my gosh, should the Pacers go get Drew? He's on this bad team. He's never ever been available. And they're
Mark Stein is available.
Right,
everybody's available, like, for the right price.
This time, finally, Mark Stein saying yes. The Pelicans would do it this time. I could finally say, yeah, we could talk about that if it comes to that.
Would the ballsiest trade in the league be they go trade Turner and both Holiday brothers for Drew Holiday to carry their bench? Or to run the three-guard lineup of Drew Holiday, Malcolm Brogdon, and Oladipo? Would that be just the ballsiest trade on the planet?
I do not endorse the Holiday brother and Turner for Drew. I do not endorse a Drew trade at this point.
No, I don't either. But that would be the best trade they could probably get, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not sure who tops that offer that really wants to get Drew Holiday. That's like a good team at least.
So, Adam, the Pelicans bench is really bad. Kenrick Williams, as awesome as he is like scout NBA Twitter's darling, is just kind of an okay role player. Jackson Hayes is a rookie, and Derek Favors hasn't been playing well this year. And Etuan Moore is missing his shots from inside the arc.
Shout out to Indiana Purdue product.
Shout out to the Purdue product.
The Hoosier.
Chicago is Indiana. Come on.
He didn't go to IU. He didn't go to IU is what I was trying to know. I didn't want to mix that up. He did not go
to IU. Okay. That's okay.
Jahlil plays for this team.
Jahlil Okafor is just bad at defense.
He plays basketball for this team. Not well.
Yeah, that is a good assessment. Nico Melli can shoot, as we saw on opening night, and yet he's only at 30%. I feel like he's just better than that when I watch him. Anyway, their bench is bad, and when you mix and match, especially without Ingram, they just can't really click as a second unit. They really rely on Giroux to be like gelled as a team. So there's 12 minutes a game where they just have nothing.
So who is your X factor?
Their wing defense is basically Brandon Ingram or nothing. So you could pick TJ Warren because of that. But I don't know. I think if Jeremy Lamb's back, he's a safe bet, right? Redick's not a great defender and uses length to bother that shooting.
Yeah, I think I saved
this. But if he's playing.
Yeah, I think that's a safe one. I've saved this, but the bench is obviously mine for this.
Ah, you finally used it.
You only use it once a week. We had that rule. We weirdly boxed ourselves in with this rule that nobody, our own rules.
We screwed ourselves again. Yeah, we didn't pick Butchers, but I mean, it's Drew Ingram, right?
Yeah. Definitely, for me, it's probably Ingram because probably guarded by Warren.
They're on that basketball team who can like score the ball.
If Warren guards him, Warren doesn't really play defense, so you're looking at 28 probably points from.
Do you remember last year? I don't know why this game is so vivid to me. Their game in New Orleans where they were up like 15 with like 5 minutes to go, and the Pelicans would go on like a 4-0 run, and then Darren Collison would hit a big shot, and then a 6-0 run, and then Darren Collison would hit a big shot. And then a 4-0 run again, and then Darren. Darren Collison so clutch all of a sudden?
Didn't they barely beat him last year?
They barely won. That was like three games after Vic got hurt.
That's right. They won by like 1 point, if I remember right.
That is correct. And 2 years ago, they tried to play there, and the roof was leaking.
That's right. They didn't play there.
Yeah, they
no, they did.
The Pels had the back to back to back, and the Pacers were right.
And the Pacers played like every other day in March for a month.
Yeah, that's the crazy Pelicans Pacers games in New Orleans have passed. Is this one of the ones? I probably should have checked that.
I think this will be the most fun game for the Holiday family because it's the first time when all three brothers, I think, are pretty good basketball players now. Right? Aaron Holiday wasn't that good last year, but this year he really is good and they play really well together. And I wonder if that makes Drew kind of jealous to watch his brothers do that or whatnot. But also, Drew is on another level than both his brothers, so maybe he just is like,
Have you seen the pictures on Justin's Instagram of them watching Drew's games in the hotel room?
So they are pretty close, I guess. I was wondering if Drew's like on a whole lot of like, because he's on another level, right? I mean, like Justin Holiday.
He's like fringe all-star level, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's borderline top 30 basketball player versus like Justin Holiday, kind of barely in the league, hence why nobody sent him.
Not anymore. Now
he's firmly in the league. And Aaron Holiday is making his way. It could be Drew Holiday level eventually, but isn't yet.
Yep.
Remember when Drew signed his contract and everybody thought, oh, this is going to be a terrible deal? And it's probably been like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, Drew's a pretty misunderstood player because his defense is what makes him awesome.
Well, it also was just like, what were his numbers when he signed his contract? I don't think his offense numbers were as good as they got, right? Weren't they? He was more like 15 points a game, so it was kind of his concern of like, can he score? In 20 last year, too. So
yeah, that's fair.
He elevated his offense that made him worth it.
Drew's just awesome.
I agree. I think he's really, you know, if the Pelicans were in the Eastern Conference, he'd be talked about as he'd be every All-Star team every year.
He'd been three or four by now.
I mean, that's low key. I mean, I have a lot, but that's like one of the weirdest things in history where if the Pelicans stayed in the East like they were until like 2005, they probably would have made an NBA Finals in the last 5 years.
Maybe. All right. This one's tough because it's a road back to back. But I'm still picking
the
win.
The Pelicans suck. If they lose the Pelicans on a back-to-back, they should basically like not be playing basketball.
Flip that and I'm ready to fire it off when they lose a road back-to-back. it was a road back-to-back.
I'm not gonna say that. I'm gonna say they lost the Pelicans, which is a sad loss. The same when they lost the Hornets, even though they technically had like down 9 guys, that was still, this is just a sad loss still.
Folks, if you are still here.
We went a little long. Sorry, guys.
Taking time out of your holidays to enjoy Locked On Pacers.
Maybe you're driving somewhere, so it's good.
Yeah, I have an 8-hour drive coming up this weekend. Can't wait, Adam. Cannot wait.
I'm sure you'll love to tune into our podcast. Listen to yourself talk some more, right?
Listen to myself talk. So we will not have an episode on Christmas Day, but we will do the other 4 days this week. So, woohoo!
Yeah. We are here for you guys on this Christmas holiday.
We, like the Pacers, will enjoy the 4 days off in between. So enjoy tonight's game. We'll be back tomorrow recapping the action. That's you, Adam, correct?
Yes, that is me.
All right. As always, the show is on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Go check us out there for more information all the time. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.